Welcome into the Monday edition of the Doug Russell Podcast. Hope everyone was able to get outside and enjoy the incredible Wisconsin weather the last few days. It's not going to continue for much longer, but nevertheless, thanks for finding us wherever you find your podcasts, Apple, Google, iHeart, Stitcher, Alexa, TuneIn, wherever. We're glad you found the show. You can interact with us on our socials, of course, on Instagram and Twitter. Our handle is at Doug Russell Pod. Facebook and YouTube, search for the Doug Russell Podcast, or you can always email the show at DougRussellPod@gmail.com. Update this morning from the University of Wisconsin football program. They began their regular game week prep today, Monday. Right now, they have 5 active COVID-19 cases. 2 of them are student athletes. 3 of them are staff members, so a total of 5. That is down significantly. Most importantly, 0 positive cases in 5 out of the last 6 days. So it looks like the Badgers are on track to play Michigan on Saturday. If everyone on the Badgers can stay healthy and everyone on the Wolverines can stay healthy, we'll actually have some Badgers football this weekend. All right, Sunday in the NFL. No Packers, of course, but there still was a full slate of meaningful games. In Nashville, it was the Bears and the Titans. This one was Tennessee most of the way.
Play fake, Tannehill rolling, throwing, catching, Smith, touchdown, Titans! Red zone money, Ryan Tannehill!
Mike Keith on 104.5, the zone in Nashville. A couple of late scores by the Bears made it respectable. Still, Tennessee comes out with a win 24-17. Chicago falls to 5-4 on the season. Tennessee improves to 6-2. At New Metrodome in downtown Minneapolis, it was a Norris Division clash between the cellar dwellers. Maybe the Vikings are starting to turn things around?
1st and 10 from the 30, handoff. Dalvin shakes a tackle at the 25, and the race is on, and it's loose! Touchdown! 70-yard touchdown this time by the best in the business, baby!
Paul Allen on the call on KFAN Radio in Minneapolis. The Vikings and Lions both now 3-5 on the season. Minnesota with a 34-20 victory in Minneapolis. NFC met AFC in KC, a close one for the defending champs.
7:45 to go in the game. Hardman spinning in motion. They fake the jet sweep. They throw it right side. Caught at the right front pylon. Touchdown! Kansas City! Patrick Mahomes, 4 touchdown passes, 101 in his career, the fastest in National Football League history.
Mitch Holthus on the call on WDAF Radio in Kansas City. The Chiefs squeak past the Panthers 33-31. Kansas City now 8-1 on the season. Carolina falls to 3-6. KC, by the way, 17-1 in their last 18 games. That does include the playoffs. Don't look now, but the Dolphins are good.
Play action fake. Corner of the end zone. Touchdown!
Wow, what a throw.
Mac Hollins, his first touchdown as a Dolphin.
Jimmy Cephalo on the call from WQAM Radio in Miami. The Dolphins edge the Cardinals 34-31. Miami has now won 4 straight games for the first time since 2016. Both teams, Miami and Arizona, they're 5-3 on the season. A game for the ages. The top 2 passing quarterbacks in NFL history. Tell your kids about this one. Except that it was a complete annihilation.
Breeze drops back to throw. Looking over the middle. Hit as he throws. Delivers. Touchdown, Emmanuel Sanders. Now Breeze with an I formation. Handoff goes to Kamara off of right left tackle. And he's in for the touchdown. Second down and 3. Breeze in the gun, close formation, single receiver either side. Breeze drops back to throw over the middle, and that ball is caught easily for a touchdown. Josh Hill.
Zach Strife on the call on WWL Radio in New Orleans. The Saints hammer the Buccaneers 38-3. New Orleans now 6-2 on the season. Tampa Bay is 6-3. By the way, Tom Brady throws 3 interceptions for the first time since 2011. And finally, in Buffalo, the Bills are for real.
The offense on the field. Josh Allen in the gun, takes the snap, going to keep it himself, runs to his right, gets inside the 5, into the end zone, touchdown Buffalo. Josh Allen, it only took 1 play to cash in on Tre'Davious White. Amazing interception. Touchdown Buffalo.
John Murphy on the call on WGR Radio in Buffalo. The Bills beat the Seahawks 44-34. Buffalo now 7-2 on the season. Seattle falls to 6-2. By the way, for the Bills, they are 7-2 to start the season for the first time since 1993, the days of Jim Kelly and Thurman Thomas. As for the Seahawks, star quarterback Russell Wilson wasn't a star yesterday. 4 turnovers, 2 picks, and 2 fumbles lost. As for Josh Allen, have a day. 31 for 38, 415 yards, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. For what it's worth, a quarterback rating of 138.5. According to NFL research, Allen becomes the first quarterback in the Super Bowl era with multiple games of 400 or more passing yards, 3 or more passing touchdowns, no interceptions, and a 130-plus passer rating. Again, he's done that twice now this season. It puts him in this company for their careers. Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, and Patrick Mahomes. They've done that multiple times, but throughout the course of their careers, not in one season. Right now, just Josh Allen. He's had an amazing run so far this season. All right, taking a look at the standings in the NFC North, the Packers in first place with a 6-2 record. The Bears still a game and a half now behind at 5-4. The Vikings and the Lions, after Minnesota's win on Sunday, both now 3-5 on the season. As far as the NFC is concerned, right now 3 teams with identical 6-2 records, the Packers obviously being one of them, along with the Saints and the Seahawks. Tampa Bay now 6-3 on the season. Arizona, Los Angeles, they're both 5-3. The Bears and the 49ers, they bring up the rear as far as potential playoff teams. The Bears with a 5-4 record. San Francisco, after the Packers beat them on Thursday night, they are now 4-5 on the year. Over in the AFC, the Steelers, the NFL's lone unbeaten team, they're 8-0 after their win on Sunday. Kansas City now 8-1 on the season. Buffalo, as I mentioned, 7-2. The Ravens and the Titans are both 6-2. And right now, the Colts, Dolphins, and Browns all 5-3 on the season. The NBA is still a ways off. They chose the pause and restart model, but that meant that the NBA season wrapped up in September, so they'll restart in December with the NBA draft coming up next week. College basketball, however, is upon us. In many ways, college basketball was the harbinger of how the world reacted when the COVID outbreak began to engulf the United States. The conference tournaments, if you'll recall, I know it seems like it was about 10 years ago, the conference tournaments had just begun when it was obvious the pandemic needed to be dealt with. At first, all the fans were sent home. Then the conference tournaments themselves were canceled. Then the NCAA tournament, in short order, was canceled as well. That might have been a blessing in disguise, specifically and narrowly for the Marquette men's basketball team. Again, in a very narrow sense, because no one was talking about the fact that for the second straight season, they were mired in an end-of-the-season free-fall collapse. You remember the season before the Golden Eagles at one point, and for 1 week, they were a top-10 team after beating Providence at Fiserv Forum. They were 23-5 overall, 12-3 in conference. Then the free-fall began. Marquette lost 6 out of their last 7 to end the 2019 season. That included their loss as a number 5 seed to Murray State, the number 12 seed in the first round of the NCAA tournament. That was 2019. They followed that up, though, with losing, wait for it, 6 out of their last 7. So what's not fair is projecting how Marquette might have done in the Big East tournament or the NCAA tournament because they had to be canceled because of COVID. That's not fair. What is fair is math. Losing 6 out of your last 7 in back-to-back seasons suggests that you may have run out of gas at the end of the season. Math part 2. Steve Wojciechowski has been the Marquette basketball coach since April 1st, 2014. That's more than 6.5 calendar years. He's going into his 7th season as the Golden Eagles head coach. And Marquette, in that time, has still never won an NCAA tournament game. They missed the tournament his first 2 seasons in 2015 and 2016, bounced in the first round in 2017, went to the NIT, had a deep run in the NIT in 2018, in 2019, bounced in the first round as a number 5 seed by Murray State, as we mentioned, and last year the season got canceled. So you can't really blame Steve Wojciechowski for last season, I guess, but they were still 8-10 in conference. They were 18-12 overall when the season got called. In sports, we're all judged by our predecessors to a certain extent. It's probably inevitable. Buzz Williams is Steve Wojciechowski's predecessor. And in the same amount of time, the 6 seasons, you look at the amount of success that Buzz Williams had getting to the NCAA tournament in 5 of his 6 seasons, getting to the second round in his first year, bounced in the first round in his second year, but then 3 straight Sweet 16s, including an Elite 8 in 2013. That's a pretty good postseason record. So as much as everyone loves Coach Wojciechowski, and I think that he is the best representative that any college athletics program could possibly have. He runs a clean program. Kids like him. He cares about the university. He cares about the community. As a human being, Steve Wojciechowski is your guy. But the math indicates that there are some prominent folks around the program getting a little bit antsy. This season, the biggest question, though, is how you replace the school's all-time leading scorer in Marcus Howard.
You don't replace him on the floor with one player. That would be impossible. You don't plug in another 26, 27 point-a-game scorer. What you do is you have to take up those losses collectively, especially on the offensive end. And in that respect, there's some exciting things to that. I think we can be a more balanced team. We'll look different on both ends of the floor than we did with Marcus. And time will tell if that's better, but we'll certainly look different. But I like our depth. I think we have a lot of very good players who can impact winning. I think we can score in a lot of different ways. And I think we have defensive versatility. I'm hoping that those things translate to a lot of wins.
The biggest new face this year on the Marquette men's basketball team is Dawson Garcia, the preseason Big East Freshman of the Year, someone who had whittled his choices down to Marquette, Indiana, Memphis, and Minnesota. He's from the Minneapolis area. We talked about math a moment ago. For Coach Wojo, Garcia could add up to exactly what this Marquette program needs.
He's a kid who's got a chance to have a huge impact on us winning this year. And so I'm excited to coach him every day, and I'm excited for Marquette fans to watch him play. Has tremendous versatility. He's got a really good competitive spirit and motor. He wants to get better, and he brings a high level of effort each and every day. You know, I've been really fortunate in my time here to coach a number of guys, I think almost one every year, that have been on the all-freshman team. And Dawson stands out among that group.
Now, of course, this being 2020, there are COVID protocols that had paused team activities. A positive COVID test shut down all activities for a couple of weeks. They've been back on the court now, though, for almost a week. For the coach, he knows there are going to be some bumps in the road.
Scheduling this year was unlike it's ever been. And we had to really work as a group here at Marquette and then work with a number of other different schools to figure out, you know, how we could get it accomplished. And fortunately, we were able to. Now, hopefully the schedule will go off without a hitch. To think that we're the only university that's going to have a COVID positive test is just not realistic, especially with where our country is trending as it relates to COVID. So we may find that although we're going to start the season in a travel model, the best bet to have a season that best resembles what we're all used to is a bubble.
Joining us now, you read his great work in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel on the Marquette beat, Ben Steele, joining me here on the Doug Russell Podcast. Ben, always great to talk to you. Does it seem like we're into basketball season yet? Because this whole year has been a time warp.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that earlier today. You know, ever since the coronavirus, quarantine, 6 months working out of my basement, just feels like every day is the same. And then with this weather recently, 70 degrees in Milwaukee for 3 or 4 days straight, and I'm looking at the calendar, it's November 5th, 6th, 7th. I'm like, you know, shouldn't we be playing basketball now? So it's just confusing on a lot of different levels.
No question about that. Some big question marks, I think, though, about this Marquette basketball team and the way that it was a truncated end to last season, of course, but it was still, at least it seemed like, a familiar end to their season last year where they were playing good basketball. They were playing great. They were ranked. And then the bottom fell out and they lose 6 out of their last 7 going into what would have been the Big East tournament. Obviously, that got canceled because that's when the outbreak of coronavirus really started to take hold in North America. But how do you turn the page on that not 1 year, but 2 years in a row? And now you've got so many new faces that are a part of the program.
Yeah, it's going to be completely different season for Marquette. Obviously, the biggest change is no Marcus Howard this year. And you mentioned the end of the season last year, it was all Marcus Howard all the time. Marcus, you know, some would say maybe to the detriment that Marquette kind of relied on him a little too much. But, you know, he was the nation's leading scorer, first team All-American. And at the end of the year, he was the only guy that they could count on to consistently get buckets. And, you know, he was efficient. He put up a lot of shots at the end of the year, but he was very efficient. The other guys, they couldn't really find a second or third score at the end of the year. Most of the other players were struggling. That was probably the biggest reason for the slide at the end of last year. Defensively, they kind of fell apart too. At the beginning of last season, I thought that year's team was going to be much improved defensively. And there were stretches where it looked like it was coming around, but at the end of the year, they just couldn't get stops either. So you combine all that, those two big issues, you know, not finding the secondary score and the defensive meltdown, that led to the losing 6 out of 7 to end the regular season last year. So, you know, you take Marcus out of the equation. Brendan Bailey is no longer there. Sakari Adams no longer there. So this is a completely new team. And I've been thinking about this team a lot, and I can't figure out how they're going to look. So it's going to be interesting to see how all these pieces kind of fit together. I'm interested to see how they're going to play this year.
I want to get to this year's team in just a second, but you mentioned Marcus Howard. What is he doing right now? What's his next step? And I know that the pandemic has probably thrown a lot of things and a lot of plans of a lot of athletes that are making that transition kind of into flux. Do we know what he's up to?
Yeah, he's in Phoenix. That's where he's from. He's back home training with his brothers. His oldest brother, Desmond, has kind of been like his kind of skills trainer in the off season. His dad is kind of like a strength and conditioning coach. They've been working out together with his family. His middle brother, Jordan, he played at Central Arkansas, and he's played in the G League, and he played in a couple foreign leagues last year. I know he was in Korea. I think he played at some other countries. So they're all kind of training together. He's been doing NBA interviews all by Zoom this year. They had a virtual combine where they kind of tape him doing all these different skills. So NBA draft next week, I expect maybe Marcus might be picked in the second round, maybe late second round. If not, he'll definitely get a training camp deal somewhere. This year, that I don't know how much that helps him. It'd be a truncated kind of training camp season, but he's hoping to latch on in the league somewhere. If not, after that, you know, probably play in the G League and try to work his way back to the NBA somehow.
Tell me about Dawson Garcia and what he brings the Marquette program and how hard Marquette worked to bring him to Marquette.
Yeah, Marquette's got a really good recruiting class. They bring in 3 forwards. They're all kind of different, but Dawson Garcia is kind of the crown jewel of this recruiting class. He's like 6'11", left-hander. He's from Minnesota, really highly skilled. I went to go see him play last year after he was named a McDonald's All-American, and I went to go see him play like the week after he was named to that team. Legit 6'11", he's a left-hander. What stood out to me most when I watched him was just his ball-handling skills as a 6'11 guy. Just could really dribble it, playing point guard, seeing the floor. He's a decent shooter, pretty good shooter, and being 6'11", he's still got those back-to-the-basket skills, so he's going to be a big part of the team this year. I think he can kind of create a lot of mismatches with that ball-handling skills. If he can bring a big guy out to guard him on the perimeter, I think he could take advantage of that and use his size down low. You know, like freshman, I'm sure he'll run into some struggles here and there, but definitely got a high ceiling. Probably a future NBA player. That's kind of where the league's going, as far as like a 6'11 guy that could shoot and can handle the ball pretty well. It'd be interesting to see him on the defensive end. He's a little skinny, but from all accounts, he's a very hard worker, putting on muscle this year, and definitely a bright future for that kid.
And Marquette worked really hard to get him as well. I read your story about how they flew to South Dakota to take his grandparents out to lunch.
Yeah, they put the full court press on him. All the kind of blue blood schools were kind of getting after him. Marquette, as far as their recruiting strategy, they're pretty good at identifying talent early and then kind of developing relationships early before, like all the, you know, the Kentuckys and the North Carolinas of the schools kind of swoop in at the end. But with Dawson, they were able to maintain that relationship. And yeah, you mentioned they knew that Dawson's family, his grandparents were important to him. They lived in North Dakota, and one day the coaching staff just took a private plane out to North Dakota just to have lunch and with his grandparents. And I think that, you know, that impressed the family a good deal. Obviously it worked. They got him to sign on the dotted line. So yeah, sometimes it's those little details that do the trick.
Ben Steele from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel joining us here on the Doug Russell podcast. You can follow him on Twitter at Ben Steele MJS. As far as also making up for the loss of the offensive firepower of Marcus Howard, How does, and granted, it's November 9th, there's still a couple of weeks before the first game, and certainly about more than a month before the first conference game in the Big East, which looks a little bit different now that UConn is in the conference. But to make up for Marcus Howard and his offensive output, how do you think that those points can now be redistributed as far as Steve Wojciechowski's game plan at this point is concerned?
We should mention another newcomer, DJ Carton, is a transfer from Ohio State. He got a waiver to play immediately. I think he played in 20 games for Ohio State last year, if I remember off the top of my head correctly. But he's a little different than Marcus, but he's a very, very explosive athlete. I think the ball is going to be in his hands a lot this year. He can shoot the ball a little bit. I mean, nobody's going to be able to shoot like Marcus Howard last year. But I think it was DJ Carton was close to around a 40% three-point shooter last year. But his skill is more athleticism, getting to the rim, finishing around the rim. Like, he'll dunk on you. He's about 6'2". He's got that explosive athletic ability. He's probably another future NBA player. But I think he's going to be the kind of fulcrum of the offense. Another left-hander like Dawson Garcia. Dawson Garcia is probably going to be relied on to score a few buckets. Kobe McEwen, returning senior, struggled a little bit last year, had kind of an uneven junior year. He hurt his wrist. I'm sure that affected him a lot. But Kobe and DJ Carton are going to be probably the starting backcourt for Marquette this year. That's probably where the bulk of the scoring is going to come from, those guys.
When you look at the NBA seasons that some of the more prominent former Marquette players have had, specifically Jimmy Butler, Jay Crowder, their really deep playoff runs into the finals. Wesley Matthews had a good season with the Bucks. For years, it was years and years ago, it was Doc Rivers, and then it was Dwayne Wade. Well, neither one of those guys. Doc Rivers has been a coach for a couple of decades now, and Dwayne hasn't played in a couple of seasons. But for those younger players, from a recruiting intangible standpoint, how important is it to the program that guys like Jimmy Butler and Jay Crowder and Wesley Matthews are kind of front and center and have been front and center on NBA teams?
Yeah, especially this year, when those guys were, especially when the Bucks played the Heat in the second round, Marquette had three former players playing in that series, and it was, I'm sure you watched the games. It was mentioned every broadcast. Several people, myself included, probably wrote stories about the Marquette connection with all those guys, and it was just in the conversation. So, when you're in the conversation, that's easier for college coaches to kind of capitalize on that and recruiting, kind of texting with guys, talking with whoever they're recruiting at the time, saying, look at what Marquette did for these guys, you can be the next guy. Definitely helps out when you're kind of in that cultural conversation. It's easy to capitalize on that.
It's been, and I feel like I asked this question at the beginning of every season, but there's a reason for it. It's been 2,414 days, I counted, since Steve Wojciechowski was hired as Marquette men's basketball coach. We're still waiting, and Marquette fans are still waiting for the first NCAA tournament win. Last season, I think you give kind of everybody a pass, but the way that their season ended, it made a lot of fans nervous. How hot is his seat going into this year to do something in March, assuming that we have a regular March Madness?
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about this before when I've been on your program. The frustrations are there. And I mean, talk to anybody associated with the Marquette program. Fans obviously frustrated, boosters frustrated, coaches and players are frustrated too, administrators are frustrated. It's an interesting situation for several reasons. This is going to be Coach Wojciechowski's seventh year. They made the NCAA tournament twice for sure. Got blown out in both of those games. Would have made the tournament last year. So you look at it, they would have made the tournament three of the last 4 years. Okay, that's good. That's on the positive side of the ledger. Then you mentioned falling apart the last two seasons at the end of the season, losing 6 of 7 to end both seasons. So that's obviously a very big red flag there. They were going to play in the NCAA tournament last year, but they didn't get a chance to, obviously. To be fair, they were struggling. I mean, likely would not have broken that skid last year, but, it's the NCAA tournament. You never know. That's why we like it so much. You never know what's going to happen. If they had gotten a good matchup, it's all about matchups. If they had played a team with a weak backcourt, maybe Marcus would have gone for 40. They would have won a couple games. You never know, but that's all hypothetical. But then, looming above all the basketball stuff, Marquette, like any other university, college in America, struggling financially right now, right, with the pandemic. Coach Wojciechowski's got a deal signed through the 2024 season from his extension that he signed a couple years back. So I don't anticipate the school making any change financially when they're talking about cutting jobs, cutting programs. I don't think the school's going to be able to justify, you know, paying a multimillion-dollar buyout to a coach and then giving another multimillion-dollar deal to a new coach on top of that. You know what I mean? So it's just, it's a weird time. I don't expect any change coming anytime soon. Now, if like this season goes completely dramatically off the rails completely, sure, maybe something happens, but I don't anticipate that happening at all. But yeah, it's an interesting situation to watch.
We've got a couple of COVID questions before I let you go. What are the COVID protocols this year? I know that Marquette had to shut down for a couple of weeks because of a positive test within the program. How is college basketball kind of viewing it? How is the conference viewing it? And how is Marquette viewing it as far as trying to keep all of their staff members and student athletes safe?
Yeah, it's like what Marquette went through a couple weeks ago. They follow the NCAA tournament guideline that the Big East is also following those guidelines. If following a positive test, Marquette men's and women's team had one positive test on each side. So following the NCAA guidelines, they quarantined everybody, coaches and staff, for 14 days. Now, during the Big East media day last week, a lot of people were asking about this because Marquette was in the middle of their quarantining at that time. You know, since it happened during the season, obviously, if you shut everything down for 14 days, you're losing four games right there. So maybe you can reschedule them, maybe you can't. But, you know, it just throws everything into chaos if you shut everything down for 14 days. A lot of people were asking, you know, all the coaches from the Big East if this was the right plan to follow. So far, they haven't announced any kind of change to that. That's still going to be kind of the guideline. Now, this is just a guideline. It's not a rule. You're not going to be punished if you have any workouts. But, you know, for the health and safety of players, I think most programs are just going to follow what the guidelines or what the people tell you. But you're not going to be punished if you don't do exactly that. So there's still a lot of room just to kind of change that. We'll see. UConn is going through the same thing that Marquette. They had a positive test a couple of days ago, and they're kind of figuring out how they're going to do this because their 14-day quarantine period would end, you know, a couple of the seasons coming up here in a couple of weeks, their quarantine period would end 2 days before their first game, I think. So, you know, that's going to be an interesting situation to watch how they monitor that. And especially once the games get going, like, if you're canceling games here or there or postponing, it's just that slippery slope. It gets away from you eventually. Maybe they go to more of a contract tracing where, you know, you isolate the positive cases and you test daily the remaining players just to make sure that no one else is positive and that those players that haven't tested positive yet can still practice and maybe you can play those guys. So it's going to be an interesting season. I don't know, with that 14-day quarantine that the Big East teams are following, I just don't see how the season can just go off that way. It's just going to be chaos, I think. But we're going to try to get through it, and I'm sure this is like everything else in the last 6 months. You know, everything changes, so they might change that. The NCAA rule is you got to play 13 games to make the NCAA tournament this year. So that's the number that all the teams are trying to get, at least to that number. And, you know, we'll see, man. It's going to be crazy, Doug.
That I believe. I guess the last thing that I have for you is, how is it changing how you and the rest of the media cover the Marquette program? Because, like you said, I mean, media day last week was on a Zoom call, and Bill Scholl has already announced that there's not going to be fans at Fiserv Forum or the Al McGuire Center, for that matter, for men's or women's games, at least through the end of the year. So from a media standpoint, how are you doing your job at this point?
That's a good question, Doug. I'm still trying to figure that part out.
So welcome to 2020. As we are all trying to figure it out.
I'm sure everything will be, both the interviewing and all that stuff is going to be done by Zoom. We don't want that in-person, same-room interaction. I'm sure they're going to try to limit that. Get used to talking to people on Zoom and phone calls here and there and just figuring that way. I haven't even heard if I'm going to be allowed in the building for games. I assume I am, but I heard that they were going to allow a few media members into games, but that was, you know, a couple weeks ago, and, you know, the way Wisconsin's going as far as coronavirus cases, you know, skyrocketed the last couple weeks, so I don't even know if that's the case anymore. Just going to take it as it comes, man. It's like you said, man, we just got to figure it out one day at a time.
That's the theme for 2020. Just figure it out as it comes along, and we'll take it as it goes, right? Ben Steele joining us from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. You can follow him for all of his Marquette insights at Ben Steele with an E at the end, MJS, Ben Steele MJS on Twitter. Also find him in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel or JS Online. Support local journalism because it's important. And Ben does a great job over at the Journal Sentinel. Ben, we appreciate the time so much. Enjoy the season coming up, he said, with a question mark. And hopefully we'll talk to you soon.
All right, Doug. Appreciate you, man.
Thanks, Ben. There he goes. Ben Steele on the Marquette beat for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. That's it for us. Don't forget, you can interact with us on our socials, on Instagram and Twitter, at Doug Russell Pod, Facebook, and now YouTube. Search for the Doug Russell Podcast. You can email the show at DougRussellPod@gmail.com. Have a good one. We'll see you on an Anything Goes Wednesday later this week.